Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about how to manage your microservices and make them scale with Kong. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 507, recorded November 21st, 2018, Kong. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to play with right after this show. Today is probably one of those. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks. Glad to be here, Randall.
And you're not at your office. You're back in your lair or whatever?
Yeah, well, tomorrow's a holiday. So, and it was up until today anyway. It was pretty smoky outside. So definitely wanted to stay at home and indoors. But luckily, we've got some rain going on today. So fire issues should be minimized, hopefully. And
that's good.
Yeah, and it's good to work from home the day before Thanksgiving. So.
Yeah, it's kind of handy. I'll be doing this show, and I've got a few more hours of work to do for ZipRecruiter, and then I'm going to hang out with my friends. For those of you that are watching the video, you might recognize the Tijuana kitchen set. So that's the kitchen of our apartment down here, and my friends are coming over early because, again, they're not working tomorrow. So we're going to be heading downtown and trying to find things to do. So, and it's my birthday tomorrow. It was my birthday last year on the show day, but of course my birthday changes days of the week, so it'll be my birthday tomorrow, also on Thanksgiving. So it's one of those turkey birthdays that I have to do every once in a while. So the show's not about us or about our locations. It's about wonderful projects, today being no exception to that. We're going to be bringing on in a few minutes Marco Palladino. I hope I said that close to correct. I guess he'll correct me when he comes on if I did it wrong. We're talking about Kong, which is an API gateway. That means it's a form of middleware between computing clients and your API-based applications. So this is middleware. So basically, you know, everything's going to API, REST API, things like that now. But what you end up doing, as I was noticing the documentation this morning, is you end up doing that you end up doing the same sort of, you know, for all your separate APIs, you end up doing the same sort of authentication and rate limiting and load sharing and things like that, load balancing. And what Kong is promising and delivers on, apparently, is to be sort of an intermediary. So all of your API requests come in through this common point of thing, and in that intermediary, you can put your authentication, your load balancing, your rate limiting, things like that. And then that would then farm out to all the actual services behind it. So it's middleware. There are a few interesting products in this field, but Kong seems to be the number one player, the Kong of all of these things. That's all I could glean in about an hour. The documentation was long, and I was trying to find the easy way in. Didn't want to install it just to play with it. So, Aaron, what do you know about this so far?
Yeah, so I came across Kong, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago or something when I was in the middle of a job search. And I was like, ooh, this looks interesting. And there's a lot of these because the especially with people moving to the cloud and having much more distributed apps than they used to, something like this is actually really necessary. I'm not going to do all their marketing for them. But it's actually really, you're seeing a lot more of these services pop up. So Clicker is another one that comes to mind, where they were doing kind of the same thing for containers. You write your deployment and set up your containers once, and then you can deploy them to, you know, either on-prem or to any cloud or whatever. There just is this need to centralize this management, and in this case, these API calls to these apps, in a way that makes it much more efficient for developers and people working on the infrastructure to actually, spin up all these different apps written in all these different languages on all these different platforms.
And I saw in the documentation a couple of times service mesh pop up. So I need to figure out if this is a service mesh manager or whether that's an entirely separate thing. But I saw that pop up a little bit as I was doing the research for this morning's show. So we do have a lot to talk about and want to get right into it. But before we do that, I do have a very important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean provides the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications with droplets, virtual machines that are a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. You can choose from standard or CPU-optimized droplets and customize from there. DigitalOcean is designed for developers. The easy-to-use control panel and API lets developers spend more time coding and less time managing their infrastructure. Industry-leading price to performance. Access the computing resources you need at the lowest rates, saving up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. And you'll always know what you pay per month with a flat pricing structure across all data center regions. It's included at no additional cost. 99.99% uptime SLA, cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerting, full DNS management, global data centers, enterprise SSDs, easy-to-use API. Over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest-growing startups, and including me, Stonehenge.com, rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. That's do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring our guest, Marco Palladino. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. This is Marco Palladino. Thanks for having me
here. Cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
San Francisco.
San Francisco. So are you getting some of that smoke and stuff that Aaron was just talking about?
Oh, definitely. It was horrible. But today it's getting much better because of the rain.
Cool. Well, I hope that all works out. And my heart goes out to everybody who lost so much on recent fires. This is just horrible, absolutely horrible. So give us a 30,000-foot view. I hope I described it well, but why would someone reach for Kong? What problem are they trying to solve when they're reaching for Kong?
Kong, it's a platform for developers, for enterprise architects to connect, secure, extend their services, but most importantly, to intelligently broker the flow of information between all of these services within the organization.
We're moving to
a world that's more connected, that's more distributed, right? And so the way we're building software, the way we're building APIs, the way our services are being communicating with each other has fundamentally changed in the past 10 years, right? And so as we have new emerging ways of building software, we do also have new problems that we have to fix. And so Kong is an attempt to fix most of these problems.
And so I understand that actually watching ZipRecruiter in particular is like moving to an entire like Kubernetes solutions and containers. Is that the problem was that originates, you know, from stuff that was built, say, 10 years ago, like ZipRecruiter was, is that you end up with a monolithic code base that all has to be primarily in the same programming language because you can't really mix languages. But once you start breaking out microservices, this could be in Python, that could be in Ruby, this could be in Perl still, that sort of thing starts to be able to work out. So APIs and RESTful services seem to be the way to go. So you're also experiencing this kind of growth rate from your perspective as well, right?
That's correct. I mean, the industry has been changing because of three main trends. The first one is that information is always in motion, is always in flow between one service and another service. You know, with the monolith, we used to have these large data pools that the monolith was handling. But as we've been decoupling the monolith into different parts, different components, different services, now that information has to fly from one service to another. So there is information that's always in flight. And then, you know, the second trend is that as we are destroying the monolith, we are adopting distributed, decoupled technologies and architectures. And so that fundamentally changes many things that we were used to do, like how do we deploy these systems? How do we protect them? How do we secure them? And how do we connect them? And then the third trend is that we're seeing this happening across tens of thousands of different services. So effectively, we're moving from a place where we have a few moving parts, the monolith, you know, large code bases, large teams working on those code bases, to a place where we have distributed, decoupled services, many of them, and the teams as well are becoming decoupled and distributed, like the microservices they're working on.
And another thing that's interesting and maybe you sort of covered this already, but different things want to scale at different rates. I mean, ZipRecruiter had the problem of, you know, everything was on the web servers, including all the extra processing, things like that. So if that started getting bogged down, you had to fire up more web servers, even if you didn't need more web services. By having everything be separately scalable, we can get a bigger advantage. Do you agree?
Definitely. I mean, one of the biggest advantages is that every team that wants to make a change on the code base doesn't have to redeploy the entire thing all the time, right? We can decouple each specific parts of our domain logic into separate services, and then we can update and scale them independently from each other. So we do have much more isolation between those services. And because all of these different services are communicating via an interface, via an API, it doesn't really matter how we build them anymore, as long as the API can be easily understood by developers, by those services that are trying to consume it. So we are going to have an explosion of services built in PHP, in Python, in Java, in Go, in Rust, in pretty much any programming language. And the implementation doesn't matter as long as the API is easy to use. It's very well understood, which quite frankly opens up a new can of worms, right? Because now documentation, the accuracy of that documentation becomes much more important.
Absolutely, and stability in the interfaces and a backward compatibility, all that sort of stuff as well. So let's talk about Kong specifically. I mean, this is some great background material for why we need this kind of a tool. But when did Kong start, and what was the genesis for it?
Yeah, so Kong is an open core product. Open core means that there are two different packages of Kong. One of them, it's the open source package that anybody can download and use for free. And then there is an enterprise package for Kong, which delivers a platform for enterprise customers. Kong was born in 2015 from another product, from a company called MeshShape. And MeshShape was the largest API marketplace back then. So Kong was the underlying technology powering the API marketplace, where 350,000 developers could consume published APIs. And Kong was the technology powering all of these requests. So in 2015, we decided to open source our technology, and that was Kong. And then it turns out that Kong really found a very nice product market fit within the community, within enterprise architects, and we decided to double down on Kong, and now Kong is our main product.
And is this typically the changes made to Kong? Is it typically made by employees near you, or are there is there an active community of people contributing to change Kong?
Yeah, Kong has a global adoption, has a global community, and that also implies that there are contributors from all over the place making Kong a better product. We're really have DNA. Our DNA is open source. We have open source in our DNA. We have more than 100 contributors that are helping us on Kong Core. And then we have more than 5,000 related projects, plugins, or tooling that's built around Kong by other developers around the world. And as a matter of fact, Kong is being adopted pretty much all over. We have 45 million downloads and over 70,000 active instances running every month.
Wow, that's outstanding. I'm pretty sure that puts it close to number one in the space, right?
Yeah, it's the most popular, widely adopted open source API platform.
And so how did you choose to make it open source? I know you said open source is in your DNA, but you know, that's always a bit risky, especially as I saw you had you have some you know, angel investors and stuff. And was that something you had to discuss with them about, you know, we really believe in open source and we think it'll actually be better for you guys in the long run?
Turns out that we do not really had to convince them a lot about that. You know, there are very good and very popular open core products out there that are very successful. When you think about Elasticsearch, when we think about Confluent Kafka, DataStax Cassandra, I mean, open source, it's really the driver for all of these transformations that are happening in our industry. When we think about Docker, when we think about Kubernetes as well, we're talking about open source software that's being adopted by developers. And developers are making decisions on this software, they're pushing it in production, and then eventually, if they have any specific requirements, they're also pushing to buy an enterprise subscription. So the whole selling motion within the industry has been shifting away from a top-down approach, you know, the CEO, the CTO, or the VP of engineering pushing down the throats of developers the software they have to buy. The other way around, developers choose their software, they use it in production, and then they, you know, from bottom up, from a bottom-up motion, they then buy that software as well.
So can we talk a little bit about the architecture of Kong and what actually, if I'm going to install this, what actually gets installed? I mean, I'm looking at your website here. It looks like there's, you know, several components here that get installed if I was to install Kong. How does it actually work? How is the API set up and what components are installed when I install Kong?
Yes, so using Kong, it's straightforward. Kong has two different components that make Kong. One component, it's the actual Kong server, which is a stateless server. You know, people, developers, enterprise architects can deploy it in pretty much any environment and then scale it horizontally. And then we do have a database dependency that's being used if the user wants to implement Kong as a credential store, or if they want Kong to implement some sort of global rate limiting across multiple regions, right? So it's either a database and then the Kong server. And the database can be either Postgres or Cassandra, depending if they're trying to deploy Kong in a simple, single DC, single region use case, or if they want to use a more global multi-DC distributed use case.
So so it's not going to create a lot of overhead. If I'm installing this in a... what I start to think of now is a more typical example of how you would install applications where you've got microservices all over the place, right? Like how do I deploy this? Is it, can I deploy it via a Docker container? Can I deploy it? Does it have to be on a standalone instance in AWS? Like, where can it reside? Is it basically anywhere I want it to reside? Does it have to be a dedicated instance? And let me start with that and then I'll ask you the follow-up question.
Yeah, it can be anywhere. You can deploy Kong in a centralized or decentralized way, depending if you're using Kong as a north-south ingress gateway, which is the traditional API gateway use case, or if you want to use Kong as a service mesh proxy, right? So depending on what use case you are trying to deal with, you can deploy Kong as either a centralized or decentralized system. And then you can deploy Kong across a wide variety of platforms. I mean, Kong, it's lightweight, it's performant, the footprint, it's very small. That allowed us to effectively create distributions and packages for a wide variety of platforms, including Docker, Kubernetes, Mesosphere, DCOS, but also cloud-specific deployments like CloudFormation for AWS, Azure, Google, and so on, as well as on-premise and on CentOS, Debian, Red Hat, and so on.
That's awesome. So I was just looking at your website, and maybe John could pull this up. There's actually a pretty good architecture document, if you scroll down, John, that covers what you were just saying, basically, in terms of the API. Then there's plugins and the data store if you want to store things on. Mm-hmm. And you actually answered my second question, which was going to be about scalability and whether this actually you could distribute this more in a cluster fashion. What about for applications that span either multiple clouds or between the cloud and like a data, you know, traditional data center application? Do I need multiple instances of Kong running, or would I just install one instance and then the API would work for Kong, everything that was going on?
So when it comes to that, Kong, it's not opinionated. You can have one instance or you can have multiple distributed instances of Kong running across different platforms. You know, I really believe in the vision of a hybrid world, a world where we're going to have multiple programming languages working together, and that's already happening with microservices, a world where we're going to have different architectural patterns working together. It's never going to be all microservices or all monoliths or all serverless. It's going to be all of them together, depending what business requirements we have in the first place. And then I also believe in a world that's a hybrid when it comes to the actual infrastructure. So it's going to be Kubernetes, not on one cloud, but on multiple clouds. And perhaps there's also mm-hmm. going to be an on-premise component. And so given this vision, we're building Kong so that it can work in each one of these different environments, but also in each one of these different architectural patterns, not just microservices, but also monoliths and serverless and mini services and so on.
Right, exactly. And then, so once I get this set up and I've got some traffic flowing, how do I actually monitor how everything's going? Like, how do I know if I'm not getting some sort of a request form? Because these are just typical, it's an API with typical URL, get requests, right? I mean, this is just HTTP get requests that are going on. Or is it something different? Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
It can be both. So you can have any sort of service behind Kong. It can be any TCP service. It can be an HTTP service. And then you put Kong in front of it. And then Kong connects those services together. It allows you to protect them, to secure them. And we have this concept of plugins. Plugins really are extensible components that you can apply on top of the execution path of every API request. And so there are plugins for authentications. There are plugins for rate limiting. There are plugins for transformations, for observability, for logging, for monitoring. So you deploy your APIs, you deploy Kong, you connect Kong with those APIs, and then you apply plugins on top of Kong for whatever function you want to execute on top of Kong. So if you want to protect, rate limit, secure the APIs, you would choose the right plugins, add them on top of Kong, and then Kong will execute them on every API request.
Cool. And then what about modern deployment methodologies as well? I mean, how is this going to interoperate if I'm part of a DevOps team, for example, I'm rolling out code, several times a day or something like that, and I've got to spin up new, maybe my application is distributed and I've got to spin up new containers to monitor that. I mean, how does this fit into those modern software development workflows that people are using these days?
That's actually the killer use case for Kong. We have lots of those deployments, and Kong allows you for very easy integrations and with existing CI/CD workflows or tooling. So you can integrate Kong with each one of these workflows and then either redeploy Kong with this new configuration or instruct Kong to install new configuration depending on what you're trying to do. But working on top of Kubernetes, working with very progressive teams that are deploying many, many services at the same time, all of that, it's what Kong has been built for.
Cool. And then one last thing I noticed in that architecture diagram, it says you have to create the plugins with Lua. Is that the case, or can I use some other language?
Correct. So Lua, so Kong, it's built in Lua on top of Nginx. Nginx, it's a very solid and reliable foundation. And so Lua allows us very quickly to extend Nginx with scripting capabilities. It's extremely performant. So Lua has been chosen for those performance properties that it has, right? We are enabling Kong to also different languages. So you can, you will be able in the future, in the soon future, to also create plugins in other languages like Java, like Python, like Ruby, so that it allows you for better extensibility. But Lua, of course, since it's the native language of Kong, will always be the fastest option. So it really depends, right? It's a balance between flexibility of using different languages or performance and speed, right? Performance and speed, Lua, it's obviously going to be always the fastest way to building plugins, but other languages can also be used if flexibility is a bigger requirement than performance. And we're always talking about millisecond or even sub-millisecond latency here, right? So we're talking about very high-performant use cases anyways.
Well, I can't let Aaron ask all the great questions, so I get to interrupt now. But before I ask my next question, I want to give you another important message, because This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Let's talk about buying a home for a minute. Because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home these days. It's causing a lot of anxiety with folks. Well, our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process. This is how it works. Step one, answer a few simple questions and they'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. Step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval, which gives you the strength of a cash buyer. Step three, once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, they'll lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now, here's the best part. If rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/FLOSS. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Floss Weekly. So I'm curious, there's a lot of moving parts in this, or there's a lot of things to kind of work at. How do you test all this, and do you have good test coverage?
Oh, we definitely do have great unit and integration testing. I mean, Kong, it's being used in mission critical production use cases across not just like developers all over the world, but also top global 5,000, top Fortune 500 organizations. So we do have use cases of Kong up to 1 million transactions per second. And if those requests drop, they lose money, right? So being able to test the system, being able to make it reliable, it's one of the main principle, the strongest principles of Kong.
And let's talk a little bit about the difference between the Community Edition, which is, of course, the reason you're on the show, and the Enterprise Edition. Really, what am I missing when I'm not using the Enterprise Edition?
You know, the Enterprise Edition delivers a platform that allows the enterprise organization to look at their entire infrastructure from a very strategic point of view. And then it's a platform that extends the Kong open core, open source package with more features, including visibility features, developer portal, onboarding features, security features, and so on, right? So and the enterprise integrations. So the enterprise product is a platform that delivers all of that so that the actual enterprise architect can look at what each team is doing with their services, with their APIs, mm-hmm. and then deliver business value to the actual business. And this is actually a very important point to stress. The reason why architectures are changing and the reason why the role of APIs are changing, it's because fundamentally we're looking for new and better ways to scale our business, right? The business is the driver for developers and architects to explore different architectures, right? That's why we're moving from monolith to microservices. And that's why we're also adopting serverless. We're looking for new ways of scaling our business. So at the end of the day, it's very important to reconnect whatever architectural decision we're making with the actual business value that we are delivering to the actual business, right? So Kong Open Core, the open source package, is allows the developer to implement all of those security extensibility features, but then the Kong Enterprise platforms on top of that adds this new layer, the platform layer, that the enterprise architect can use to deliver value in the actual business.
If I wanted to, if I have an existing website that's delivering HTTP and HTTPS, could I drop a single Kong instance in just to pass through to my backend, but get the additional features of authentication and rate limiting? Is this something I can use for like almost any application, or does it have to be a RESTful thing?
It can be any sort of application, really. So Kong works on the HTTP, but also TCP stack. So you can effectively drop Kong in front of any website or any API or any sort of traffic. And then in a few seconds, you can apply the rate limiting plugin, the authentication plugin. And really, in a few seconds, you have a Kong gateway that protects, secures, and extends that specific website across pretty much every region where you decide to deploy Kong. So you could implement a global rate limiting across multiple clouds, multiple regions in a few seconds with Kong. It's really that simple.
Well, that's pretty exciting. That means it isn't just for ZipRecruiter. It could also be for Stonehenge, which is really really convenient there. That's a lot of fun. Speaking of rate limiting, if I use Postgres as my back end, does that work with rate limiting? I mean, it seems like there'd be a lot of data that would have to be shared and replicated quickly to get that to work.
Yes. So with Kong, we tried to be very careful on the amount of database communications we're making. So we're trying to make assumptions on, so the rate limiting function, it's actually very simple, but can also be very complex once you start digging into it. It really depends what kind of rate limiting we're implementing. So if you're implementing a global rate limiting that we want very accurate, we want a very high degree of accuracy, then Kong will be more chatty with the database because there is no other way for Kong to know otherwise what limits we have consumed yet. But you can change that balance, right? So you can choose if you want the rate limiting plugin to be either more accurate or faster. And that's configurable via Kong, right? So you can decide if you want to have a more eventual consistent sort of rate limiting or if you want to have a stronger rate limiting. The stronger, the more accurate it is, the more chatty Kong will be with the database, the more eventually consistent, the less communication will be between Kong and the database. And you can use either Postgres or Cassandra, either or, right? Depending on really what use case we're trying to use Kong with. So if it's a single DC, single data center, we can use Postgres. We can also use things like Amazon RDS or any Postgres in the cloud service. And then if it's more distributed, decoupled, more complex, we can use Cassandra. Cassandra, it's a very good data store for those kinds of use cases.
Plus, I think Cassandra can scale easier and quicker. But actually, I'm probably going to offend the Postgres people there now. They're probably all going, yes, we scale too. So, all right. And I understand from looking at some of the docs, looks like 1.0 RC2 just came out. What's in 1.0 that wasn't in the previous releases?
Yeah, 1.0, it's actually very exciting for us. You know, Kong has been, like I mentioned before, was released in 2015. But, you know, since almost immediately, Kong has been used in production across, you know, all of these different use cases. Kong 1.0 for us, it's a feature completeness release. So we knew we wanted to build certain features before being able to call 1.0. It's not a stability release. Kong has been stable since a long time ago. So with 1.0, one of those features that we wanted to release was service mesh support. So now Kong can be that one runtime that developers can use for either the traditional API gateway north-south traffic use case or for the service mesh microservices use case for east-west traffic. So that's one of the features we really wanted to release. Another one is the plugin SDK so that developers can create plugins in a much easier way with Kong. And then another one is also making sure that migrations across Kong versions would be as simple as possible. So all of these very fundamental features that we wanted to build before calling 1.0.
Sorry, you mentioned a couple times serverless, and so I just wanted to ask whether this would work in a serverless environment, like from a cloud service provider, so like AWS Lambda, for example, or you know, other serverless implementations from other cloud vendors.
Oh yeah, definitely. Kong can be put in front of any serverless implementation, so you can put Kong in front on AWS Lambda or Azure Functions or Google Functions or IBM OpenWhisk or OpenFast, and then Kong, on top of that function, it will execute any plugin you might decide to install. So if you want to secure, protect, connect that function or augment that function via Kong, you can do that. Fundamentally, that's the typical north-south use case. Kong makes no assumption as to what the underlying architecture is. Can be a function, a serverless function, can be microservices, can be monolith. Kong will work on top of each one of these architectural patterns.
And then I noticed there's something in here called Kong Vitals. What is that?
Kong Vitals, it's one of the features that we include as part of the Kong Enterprise package, and that allows the enterprise architect to get visibility on what's happening within the infrastructure. So the idea here is that we do have a platform team in the enterprise, and we have different teams and business units that are creating APIs. As they're creating those services, those APIs, the platform team wants to get visibility on what's happening within the entire organization. And so Vitals is the tool, the feature that allows them to do that.
Ah, okay. Now, is that something that I have to pay additional for? If I get, does that only come with enterprise, or do I get that with a community edition as well?
So Vitals specifically comes with enterprise, and the enterprise, it's an annual subscription. But we do also support logging plugins in Kong open source, which allows you to integrate Kong with Kibana or with Splunk or with pretty much any analytics or BI tool that allows you that supports TCP, UDP, Statsd, Prometheus, and so on transports.
Oh, perfect. So if I want to do it myself, you allow people to do that. You're opening up those the curtain, so to speak, to allow people to do it. But if you want it just all together in a single package, you could buy the enterprise version. And you said it's an annual license. I don't want to get too much into pricing, but I'm just kind of curious. You said it was an annual license, but is it a one-time annual license for the entire enterprise, or how do you scale that up and down? There must be multiple licenses for the various components instances that you have running, right?
You know, the enterprise packaging, it's one of those things that keeps changing in every organization, you know, as we as we keep building more and more features. But, you know, as of today, we do have a yearly subscription that includes all of the enterprise features, right? So you can use them all with one yearly subscription, right? And that subscription, it's been the price of that subscription is being determined by a variety of factors that the sales team can probably answer better than me.
Yeah, that's fine. I didn't want to make this a big pricing description. I'm just kind of curious, what it was like. I see there's a couple of things that it looks like are in beta right now. I don't know how long they've been in beta. So one of them is, for example, Kong Cloud. Is that like a SaaS platform for doing this where I wouldn't have to worry about installing this myself?
Yeah, it's a managed enterprise cloud. So you can deploy Kong on your own cloud. You can deploy Kong on-premise. You can deploy Kong on pretty much any environment. But if you do not want to scale Kong, then Kong Cloud, it's our managed enterprise offering. So it means that we are scaling it for you.
Yeah, perfect. And then the last thing I noticed that was also in beta is something called Kong Brain. And of course, AI is, probably one of the hottest topics going on right now. We certainly talk about it a lot. But what is Kong Brain and what's that going to do for me?
We are going to have machine learning components and artificial intelligence components as part of our Kong Enterprise offering, because fundamentally, as we're building all of these different services and as we're having so many moving parts within the organizations, we're going to have a new set of problems with a new scale that we have never experienced before. And one of those problems is, how do we make sure that the documentation is always up to date with the services that the developers are publishing, right? If the documentation is not up to date, the developers are not going to be able to consume those microservices in the first place, right? So how do we make sure the documentation can be always up to date, can be perhaps even auto-generated? And how do we make sure that security across all of these different components and services can also be enforced? You know, when we think about API security, we're usually thinking about WAF, the Web Application Firewall, which is such an outdated concept. WAF was really born for website, not for APIs in the first place. And it's really not working well as soon as we have thousands of services running within our system. So, because it's a very reactive way of thinking of security. So we have a rule set, somebody breaches, goes around the rule set, and then we have to create a new rule set to, prevent that attack from happening again. Now, that's doable if we have 1, 2, 3 APIs, like we used to have, back in the days. But now that we're having thousands of APIs, that's become untenable. And so we can implement machine learning security components within Kong to help the security of the entire system.
Okay, we're almost out of time, so I got to keep these questions short. But it's just a real quick one. This is a full Nginx, right? So I could, if I wanted to, on some ports, actually serve static files?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can use Kong. Kong's runtime can support pretty much anything, including static files. And because you're right, because it's at the end of the day, it's an extension. It's extending the Nginx runtime, you can also leverage any module that's part of the Nginx ecosystem, right? So you can effectively, you have both communities. You have the Nginx community and ecosystem at your that's available to you, and then you also have the Kong's plugins ecosystem as well to extend what Kong does.
So if I wanted, for example, to search some static files but have them rate throttled to the community or something, you know, I could just add these two together, huh?
Oh, yeah, you can do that, definitely.
Awesome, awesome. That sounds really cool. The other thing is, what's on the future for Kong? Where are you headed? What's on the roadmap?
Yeah, we are seeing that developers are using Kong in, you know, all of these different architectural patterns, right? You know, the world is moving from monolith to microservices, but not for every workload, for some of those workloads. Monoliths are never going to go away because actually they make lots of sense in specific use cases, right? And microservices obviously make sense. Microservices have a premium, right? So they're not necessarily doing microservices, it's harder than doing monoliths, right? I like to make this clear. But sometimes microservices give lots of benefits as well. So we are seeing these different trends. So there is the monolithic vertical, there is the microservices, the services vertical, the functions as a service, the serverless vertical. We want Kong to support each one of these ecosystems, and we also want Kong to be able to support any emerging ecosystems, including, for example, Istio, including, for example, gRPC and so on. So with Kong, we want to really build a neutral platform that can work in each one of these different architectural patterns, support each one of these different ecosystems, and then take it from there. And we can do that because our runtime, Kong's runtime is so lightweight and fast and performant that we can easily adapt it to different use cases.
Awesome, awesome. The next question is the most difficult question I ask of every guest. Like I said, we're running out of time. Is there anything we didn't talk about this morning that you really wanted to make sure our audience is aware of?
I think we actually covered quite many topics. I would say that, you know, open source and modern open source, it's such a key driver, like we said in the beginning, about this entire new way of building software and deploying software. And it's really, really the enabler technology that organizations are adopting today to move forward and modernize their architectures. Now, a very good important part of this is that as we adopt these technologies, it's very important to not get stuck in technologies that do not allow us in the future to expand, to, you know, transition to modern architectures, but always adopt technologies that are enablers to that transition, right? So it's very important that today we look at what we're trying to achieve in the next 2, 3, 4 years, and we adopt the right solutions that allow us to get there without getting stuck in any legacy architectural pattern.
Awesome, awesome. I mean, the reason that's a difficult question is that you have to think of the set of everything you wanted to talk about and then subtract the set of everything we talked about in your head. So it's always a difficult question for our guests. I've learned now that is a difficult question for everybody because it's tricky. Anyway, last two questions. I have to ask this, or my audience actually does send me email and yell at me or they tweet at me. What text editor is your favorite?
I'm using Sublime.
Okay. That's a fair answer on that one. That's an often answer there. I'm an Emacs guy, so I always get really happy when people say Emacs. But Sublime's perfectly valid. Second question is, when you go to write scripts, what's your favorite scripting language?
When I write any sort of script, general purpose?
Yeah.
I use Bash.
Bash, okay. Perfectly valid answer there as well. Well, Marco, it's been great having you on talking about Kong. I'm actually going to look into this a lot more now that I know that I can actually use it to help some of my problems, even personally for Stonehenge. And of course, I'll be talking to the people at ZipRecruiter about have they investigated Kong, and if not, you know, look at it, and if so, you know, why'd they choose something else? Or maybe they want to do everything handwritten, but you might have another big client there from ZipRecruiter because they're getting pretty huge now. So thanks, Marco, for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me here.
Very good. That was Marco Palladino talking to us about Kong. Kong. Yes, good name there. Anyway, we ran out of time because we actually started a little bit late. But what do you think there, Aaron?
No, this is great. And what he was saying at the end there actually really resonates, and I think it'll resonate for anybody that's working in one of these companies that's in a transitional state, right? There's so many companies that are transitioning from legacy ways of doing things, legacy ways of writing code, legacy ways of deploying into newer methodologies, DevOps methodologies, and so forth, and cloud deployments. And so I think that the nice thing about this for me is that you could use this to give access maybe to some of those legacy applications, right? Create an API that reaches into some of those legacy applications, and at the same time provide a consistent way to do that for all of your newer applications that you're deploying as well at the same time. So it really gives you kind of a unified way to create APIs for all of those platforms. And so, you know, for me, on this show, we always have a little bit of a mixed response when you have an open core technology like this, right? Because we're all about open source software. But right. For me, it looks like they've done this the right way. We'd have to ask Simon to validate. But it looks like they've done this the right way. In other words, I can get most of what I need as I'm starting up out of the open source stuff and then grow into that enterprise license, that the enterprise product as I need to, right? So I don't have to start there. I can get pretty much everything I need. And if I'm really a DIY open source enthusiast, I can take advantage of what they provide in the open source package and be very happy. And then if I grow up and I have, all of a sudden my company has thousands of employees and thousands of applications, and I just need an easy way to make this or easier way to make this happen, then I can reach up and grab that enterprise edition and start paying for it. So interesting stuff.
Yeah, I did appreciate that as well. It looks like it wasn't a sort of a loss leader, bait and switch, basically.
Right.
This will do some things, but it won't do anything that could actually be your entire organization yet. So it looks like it wasn't one of those. Okay, well,
exactly.
Like I said, we're almost out of time. Let me go ahead and wrap the upcoming guests, including a couple new ones. So next week is Vista. It's the comprehensive suite of patient care software developed by the Department of Veterans Affairs over the past 35 years. So now I'm curious about what language the early parts of that are in. I'm thinking COBOL or something like that. We'll see. That's one of my first questions next week. OpenVPN, no need to explain to this crowd what OpenVPN is. Free and open source application implements virtual private networks. YataDB is a new kind of database company delivering a proven database engine to your application, enhancing simplicity, security, stability, and scalability. Don't they all? Okay, we'll have to see what distinguishes these guys. And rounding out the year is Flutter. Eric Seidel, who I've seen in numerous publications on Flutter, is going to be on talking actually about some things that are – I can't actually say that things are happening soon, but let's just say that on December 4th, there is a big conference about Flutter. So – that's all I can say, and I'm signed up for that, so that'll be fun. So Flutter has really come a long way since I first started playing with that, and Dart as well. Just added to the schedule for coming up in January, actually, so we're just starting to push new stuff out. Nextcloud. They were previously on episode 400 back in August 2016, but a lot's happened since then. So they offer industry-leading on-premises file sync and online collaboration technology. So I'm looking forward to that show, seeing what's updated. They said there's a significant amount of change that's happened there because when they were last on, they had just forked, and now they're like really like a mature project now. So nice and fun. Also coming up in January, Zen, X-E-N, right? Zen, that's Zen. They were previously on – now, this one's a little more obvious for having a new show. They were previously on episode 67 back in May of 2009, so almost 10 years ago. So, yes, there's been a lot that has happened to Zen since 10 years ago, so that'll be great. It's a hypervisor using microkernel design, providing services, allow multiple computer operating systems to execute on the same computer hardware. Lots of stuff these days actually has Zen at their core. I think AWS was originally a Zen infrastructure. I may be getting that wrong, as I can remember. But it's amazing stuff, so that'll be fun. You want to see these and more, go to twit.tv/floss, the homepage for this show. And linked from there is our upcoming guest thing. But if you have people that you want on this show, please tell the project leader or the community coordinator to email me. My address is on that page, merlin@sonage.com. But you don't have to write that down. Just write twit.tv/floss down. That's all you need to care about. And we'll get them on as soon as possible. We've got a few more slots still open in January. And, of course, I'll just keep opening February, March, April as time goes on for as long as they let me keep doing the show. So far, this isn't going to be any threat of that. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. We take a number of questions from there. Number of questions this time, I think, was zero. But that's always a number. It's always a number, all right? You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and at Merlin on Twitter. And I've said in the past few years, I'm working on a new location to replace Google Plus. But now, as I read the fine print, only personal Google Plus goes away. So at Floss Weekly will remain even after next summer. But Randall L. Schwartz will go away. And, of course, Aaron Newcomb will also go away as well. The brand accounts will stay. So that's really, really handy. I think it's just because they ran into trouble with personal data and things like that, and they just didn't want to have to support that anymore. So that's the plan for that. I will be at KubeCon. In KubeCon, did a stately dome decree. KubeCon, actually, I think is more pronounced. That's a CNCF conference in December in Seattle. I'm going as press. I was invited as a member of the press, which is really nice. They're actually paying for my hotel, which is really cool. That rarely happens. So glad I got that nice little perk of being Floss Weekly. I have nothing else scheduled after that for quite a while. OSCON, of course, coming up the following, I think it's July or something in Portland. So I'll be there for sure. Anything you want to plug, Aaron?
Well, I was just going to say, I think I might also be at KubeCon for my work. So I may see you up there. Wow. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't bought my tickets or anything yet. Because the AWS reInvent is next week, and that's got all my mind share right now. But sure. Yeah, I'm thinking about heading up there as well. So I may see. I'll let you know if I end up going up. Otherwise, as I mentioned, AWS reInvent is next week. I'll be there at the AppDynamics booth. So come on over and say hi. I might be there. I might be in the Cisco booth. I might be all around. I've kind of got managing a bunch of different things this time. So. But definitely come over to the AppDynamics booth, say you're interested in talking to me, and they'll give me a call or something, and I'd love to come over and say hi to anybody that happens to be at AWS reInvent as well. And you can also buy my book, Linux for Makers. It's available. Holidays are coming up. I guess the holidays are here with Thanksgiving. But the holiday season is here, and you're going to be buying gifts, and I'm sure you're going to be buying all of your friends Raspberry Pis, and you need a good book to go with that. So get Linux for Makers, and it'll show you how to run, how to operate under Linux running on Raspberry Pi. And
awesome.
That's about it.
Sorry, I interrupted you at the end there. Aaron, your contributions to the show are always well appreciated. Thanks once again for being the co-host for this show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Always glad to be on. So it's been a little while. It's been a few weeks or maybe a month and a half or so. So I have to do this more often.
Anytime you're available. Anytime you're available and interested, you know how the game works. Okay. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.